side two of tape number 357, October the 6th, 1978. Rufus Taylor went on in 1967 to 1969 to be the deputy director of the Central Intelligence Agency, the number two post under Richard Helms, the CIA director. And those were the years when Permandex and the international cartels were working along with the Solidaris, the White Russian community, the Syndicate, the Gaming, the Pentagon, the FBI, Division 5 of the FBI, described in the Torbett document, all behind all of these assassinations. There was a connecting link behind all of them. And in 1967 to 69, Vice Admiral Rufus Taylor was under Richard Helms. So the importance of these deaths, you can see how people are still alive at the time the committee is formed. They're not called. The committee waited till he was dead. Richard Helms mentions his name. Richard Helms testified September 22nd, 1978, before the House Select Committee, and Rufus Taylor died September the 14th, 8 days earlier, 1978. So he had a career in Japan in Assistant Chief of Staff for Intelligence with the Pacific Fleet when Oswald was in Japan with the U-2. He was in charge of Assistant Director of Foreign Intelligence when Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Soviet Union, Director of Navy Intelligence up through 63 when John Connally was Secretary of the Navy and was involved down the allegations of the Torbett document down in Tyrol Bay. And then Mr. Taylor goes on to the Defense Intelligence Agency, which has been named in the assassinations of John, Robert Kennedy, and Martin Luther King, and Deputy Director of the CIA under Richard Helms. A very important person, and somebody that should have been interviewed a long time ago. Not that he would have given out much information. They're sworn to secrecy, and these are terrible years to be opening up these murders and conspiracies, but I think they're concealed not for the shame or disgrace of what transpired, but because of the future plans that would be interfered with, and that's what they would be afraid of. Now, there was another witness that was mentioned briefly, just I think Richard Helms talked about in terms of opening mail. They said to him, weren't you concerned, Lee Harvey Oswald, a defector? Didn't you know that you opened the mail for every Boy Scout that came through? How come you weren't interested in Lee Harvey Oswald in the Soviet Union? And I believe one of the members of Congress thought that was almost an impossibility. Well, there was a mention about Mr. Thomas Karamessine, Karamessines. I'll give it to you on your printed slip. Karamessine was another important man like Mr. Rufus Taylor. He died Labor Day, just before his name was mentioned in the October session, September sessions before the House Select Committee. And probably you didn't even see his name. If you have or buy the books, the Intelligence Activity Hearings, Volume 4, the mail openings for the Senate Church Committee, Mr. Karamessine's name comes in there. He had legal training. He practiced law. He was chief of the clandestine service when Lee Harvey Oswald was in the Soviet Union. And they said, why didn't you tell the Justice Department or the FBI about opening mail? The FBI is in charge of internal security in the United States. The CIA is not supposed to be in this business in the USA of opening mail, but the CIA didn't tell the FBI they were opening it or why. And the testimony goes on that it started out as an operational effort of our Soviet division. The Soviet division was taking mail, and I at once heard that Lee Harvey Oswald was writing to his brothers, John Pick and Robert Oswald, who served the intelligence community. That's what I've heard from several sources, but of course that's never been investigated, that he used microdotting of what was going on in the Soviet Union to write to his family. I'm sure we only had 8 or 10 defectors over there at the time. One of them was Lee Harvey Oswald's friend. They later met in Georgia, and he had acquaintances that were over there as spies. So they had an operational effort in the Soviet Union. It was a counterintelligence operation, clandestine services. Mr. Karamessine's was chief of the clandestine service. There wasn't anything in the local newspapers here. I talked to Sherman Skolnick in Chicago. There wasn't anything in Chicago for a week. He died in Canada, and there wasn't any mention in the Canadian papers that he died, and yet he was responsible for the mail openings at the time Lee Harvey Oswald was a defector in the Soviet Union and said that he was going to give his information to the Soviet Union, and we were supposed to be changing our radar boards here in the Pacific Fleet because Oswald had access to all of that information. The witness to the John Kennedy assassination that would have helped with the autopsy if he were alive was Dr. Milton Halpern. You can get that book, Where Death Delights. It's put out by Coward McCann, New York City, 1967. And he tells about performing over 60,000 autopsies and 10,000 gunshot wounds. And he talks about Commander Hume, who had only done medicine in peacetime, the Commander Boswell, who had no expertise in forensic pathology, Colonel Fink, who said he did 200 autopsies in Frankfurt, Germany, but only two of them were bullet cases. And present at the autopsy was the Surgeon General of the Navy, Admiral Galloway, Commanding Officer of the Navy, Captain John Stover, Navy Medical School. He lists the people there, and he tells how they didn't probe manually for a bullet that was in John Kennedy, and that they didn't use the x-rays or the photographs, and that there was secrecy. And he said in 1967 there was secrecy on the x-rays and pictures. The secrecy is still going on. I don't agree with the Warren Commission conclusions that only two bullets caused all of the wounds suffered by John Connally and John Kennedy. There is nothing in the Zapruder frames to rule out that John Kennedy was hit before the sign, and he claims it would be impossible. He has the same statements as Dr. Cyril Wecht had, that it would be impossible to only have those two bullets, and that they didn't manually probe for bullets, and they excluded the possibility that there were bullets in the body of John Kennedy. But by the time Dr. Milton Halpern was dead, he died in 1977, March 23rd, 1977, the House Select Committee was using testimony about the autopsy, but had not used his knowledge while he was still alive. And he was in San Diego speaking or traveling when he passed away, and I'm sure that he would have good memory on this for that particular committee. And as I mentioned, Comer Clark, the great writer from National Enquirer, he wrote articles on British girls as Nazi sex slaves, and I was Hitler's secret love. He has a quotation from Fidel Castro. "It's possible I could have saved him, Kennedy. I might have been able to, but I didn't. I never believed the plan would be put into effect. I thought Oswald must have been a nut." The implication here is that Castro knew that Kennedy was going to be killed. Then the House Select Committee answers back Mr. Blakey, that saying, "This article is not without some substance. Clark may never have interviewed Fidel Castro as claimed, but the substance is supported by, in quotes, highly confidential but reliable sources available to the U.S. government." Of course, from the DISC, Defense Industry Security Command, or the NSA, or the CIA, or the DIA, they have some expert sources that this was said to Homer Clark, even though he lied and didn't see Fidel Castro and has no great record as a historian. Another interesting witness died this last week whose name wasn't mentioned in the testimony, an Alan Blanchard, B-L-A-N-C-H-A-R-D, in Washington, D.C. at the time of the hearings. He died September the 18th, 1978. He was 49 years old. He comes from Detroit, Michigan, the Gerald Ford, Henry Ford area that I watch so closely, because that's where John Kennedy's car is deposited, in the basement of the Ford Motor Company there. He was chief of the Washington Bureau of the Detroit News, and he had a lot of involvement. He was at the right place at the right time. News-wise, he was in the South during the Civil Rights Movement. He was in Dominican Republic in 1965 when the American troops intervened there. He covered the trial of Jack Ruby for shooting Lee Harvey Oswald. He was an award-winning journalist, and I was interested in his trial of Jack Ruby. He died last week of Legionnaire's disease, a very convenient disease, coming through air conditioning, I understand. I wonder what he knew about the Jack Ruby trial for the killing of Lee Harvey Oswald. He's the only known person to die of Legionnaire's disease in Washington, D.C., and he represented the Detroit News Bureau. He's here no more. Now I have a list of witnesses that have died because, as I said at the beginning of this tape, the primary thing in investigating these assassinations is to chart out how these people died, who they were, what information they would have given you if they'd been alive. I'm going to read you the names as much as I have time for on this tape, and I hope maybe I can get them all out. This won't give you much information. I won't go into all the various ways they died, because someday I'll do a book and chart and graphs on them. But I want to give you the listing of some primary witnesses that died with regard to the assassination of John Kennedy. I have 123 names here, I'll warn you now, 123 names, and 8 or 10 whose lives were threatened if they talked anymore. Now, if I run through these names and you transcribe the tape and you have more, please send them to me, because I might have missed somebody. This is just all I have, but you might add to my list. And right now they're in alphabetical order, not year-wise, but if they were close to the hearings, I'll tell you. One was Manuel Arnheim, who died in 1977. Anyone who died 76, 77, and 78 is a primary witness, because the decision to open up the Kennedy assassination in Congress began in 76 when I wrote that position paper, at the time I wrote the position paper. Manuel Arnheim was a member of the CIA assassination teams. He worked closely with the anti-Castro Cubans, E. Howard Hunt, and Frank Sturgis. Charles Batchelor, assistant chief of police in Dallas, the man who escorted Lee Harvey Oswald down the ramp when he was killed. Alan Belmont, August 77, former assistant to J. Edgar Hoover. He worked with the Warren Commission, and his name came up during these 17 days of hearing. Eddie Benavides, a witness to his brother was a witness to the Tippit murder. He was shot in the head. The killer was never found. Guy Bannister, an FBI partner of Robert Mayhew in Chicago. He went down to New Orleans and set up an office that backed up to where Lee Harvey Oswald worked. Jack Beers, he's the gentleman who took the picture of the tramps at Dealey Plaza. The question of whether they're E. Howard Hunt or Frank Sturgis has not been resolved. Mary Bledsoe, the woman on the bus with Lee Harvey Oswald after the assassination, also had rented a room at her house to him previously. Alan Blankard, that's the newspaper man I just mentioned, who died last week, who covered Jack Ruby trial. Albert Guy Bogart, a witness to the John Kennedy assassination, a gentleman from the Lincoln Mercury Car Agency who said Lee Harvey Oswald had been there and was wanting some kind of a getaway car. Hale Boggs of Louisiana, who died in a plane crash in Alaska, a member of the Warren Commission who was putting pieces together of the Watergate Kennedy assassination. He was investigating Watergate and took a plane trip and never came back. Lee Powers, a witness from the overpass, the grassy knoll area of the Kennedy assassination. There was a babushka woman, a woman on the grassy knoll with a scarf over her head. Her husband was part of the crime syndicate in Texas. He died. I think Pent Jones has more information about him and knew that he was part of the crime syndicate, and he's never been identified publicly, but various persons had described him in this way. Daniel Burroughs, head of the Nazi Party in the United States, along with Rockwell. His name was in Lee Harvey Oswald's notebook. Comer Clark, I mentioned, the gentleman from the National Enquirer. Joe Cooper, he was a writer for Tatler magazine that went out of print, made important links to the Kennedy assassination, to the Baton Rouge connections, and to Navy intelligence. He was closer to the line than almost any person I know, with the exception of myself, and Joe had a lot of articles in the Tatler and was blown up. Roger Craig, the sheriff in Dallas, who saw Lee Harvey Oswald leave in Michael Payne's car, Ruth Payne's car, from the front of the building. Fred Lee Chrisman died in 1975. He's from the CIA, the defense agency, disguised as a priest at Grassy Knoll. His name was mentioned and recognized in the pictures before the House Select Committee. They ruled out Frank Sturgis and E. Howard Hunt, but said, yes, that's Fred Chrisman. His home base was up, I believe, Boeing aircraft up in the Seattle area and also down in New Orleans. Austin Cook, a member of the Minutemen, ran a drive-in in Dallas and was familiar with Officer Tippit. I have Marie Callas's name here, the opera singer. She died very quickly in September 1977, just a year ago. She was going to write a book, which she said in quotes, to tell everything I know. She was very close to Aristotle Onassis, and I'm very suspicious of the links of Aristotle Onassis to various Germans and people in Argentina or possible information on the assassination. I understand he had a book with the whole blueprint of the assassination. And just at the time that she was writing a book in perfect health and was working on the book and had mentioned it, she dropped dead. And I think that the whole Onassis family, Alexander Onassis, Aristotle Onassis, and Marie Callas, died because of information they had on the Kennedy assassination that would cause people to seek further or overseas for links to the murder. Charles Cabell, a former CIA official, died in 1971. He was a deputy director of the CIA in charge of the Bay of Pigs. He went into the hospital for a routine check, and he died while he was in the hospital. He had been fired along with Alan Dulles from the Central Intelligence Agency by John Kennedy. His brother was mayor of Dallas when John Kennedy was killed. James Candigan was a firearms expert. He testified before the Warren Commission. Rose Cherami was an employee of Jack Ruby, who hinted there was a conspiracy and died in a terrible automobile accident. Henry Carter also knew of the Ruby connections, Jack Ruby's links in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and was close to Hank Killam. James Chaney escorted John Kennedy to Parkland Hospital. He was a Dallas police officer. He saw John Kennedy struck in the face. He was never called as a witness. William Cheshire had information on Lee Harvey Oswald and Jack Ruby. Bertha Cheek is the woman I mentioned earlier on the tape who offered Jack Ruby money in terms of a loan, allegedly a loan, but he was to come into money. She was the sister of Earlene Roberts, also dead, who ran the rooming house where Lee Harvey Oswald lived. Interesting, the House Select Committee, in going into motives of Jack Ruby that they barely passed over, or possible links to organized crime, and we'll go into this at length later, doesn't go into the contacts with people like H.L. Hunt in Texas, or Warren Carroll of the CIA, or Bertha Cheek. Dr. Nicholas Chetta, he did autopsies in New Orleans on David Ferry, Robert Perrin, another victim of the Kennedy assassination. He'd given truth serum to Perry Russo, that was Jim Garrison's witness when Jim Garrison had arrested Clay Shaw. John Crawford, a close friend of Jack Ruby. He not only knew Jack Ruby, but he was close with Mr. Buell Frazier, the man that drove Lee Harvey Oswald to the Texas School Book Depository the morning of the assassination, and was instrumental in getting the job for Lee Harvey Oswald. Ruth Payne lived across the street from Mr. Frazier's relatives, and they Ruth Payne asked about a job for the husband of the woman living at her place, and she said, well, my family, I believe, is her brother worked. I forget, it's been so many years since I read that testimony. Her brother, Buell Frazier, drove to the depository. She could take Lee Harvey Oswald. John Crawford was a friend of both Frazier and Jack Ruby. Professor Henry Dulon, he was a brother-in-law of Dr. Chedo in New Orleans. He worked at the coroner's office. He died of a suspicious death and had information on the assassination. Eladio Davalli was a friend of David Ferry's, worked with the anti-Castro Cubans, the CIA. The same day that David Ferry died in New Orleans, his friend Davalli died in Miami. They both worked in the city where John Kennedy was supposed to be killed 3 weeks earlier. When David Ferry was arrested, right after he was arrested by Jim Garrison, or was going to be arrested, Clay Shaw had been, Ferry died, and his friend in Miami died the same day. George de Morenchild died in March 1977. Contacts the CIA, the DIA, the Nazis, the Rockefellers, Oswald's control agent, nicknamed the Chinaman, at a time when the House Select Committee, Mr. Fonzie, was about to see him. Donald Donaldson died. This was December 1977, an associate of George de Morenchild and Wilhelm Altman, who had information of the plot allegedly linking to the Rockefeller connections. Sheffield Edwards died in 1975 after appearing before Senator Church's committee. Oh, that must have been 76 then, because that committee ended in 76 on time for the elections. A CIA contact with Robert Mayhew, and he was a part of the team that hired John Rosselli and Sam Giancana. Sheffield Edwards was a liaison of the CIA to that group. And, of course, Mayhew worked under the umbrella of the Howard Hughes Organization. Mr. J.M. English, who headed the Forensic Science Lab in 1966 and in 1963, the FBI lab, died in 1977, so new experts could be brought in. Remember that at this hearing, the House Select Committee on Assassinations in 1978, they didn't use the same bullets that the FBI used in 1964. And this gentleman worked with the FBI lab and worked with the forensic FBI department. Clayton Fowler, Jack Ruby's defense lawyer, the one that worked with Jack Ruby during the polygraph test, died. David Ferry, the gentleman worked with Mr. Davalli. He worked also with Carlos Marcello, in the New Orleans area. He worked with the CIA, the pilot, the gentleman with the suspicious backgrounds who was working with cancer in mice and was a hypnotist. An interesting background. He died in 67. Carlo Gambino died in 1975. He worked closely with Vito Genovese, the syndicate family. Jack Ruby had contacts, according to Nancy Perrin Rich. She was with Jack Ruby. He was doing some gun running and was with the military and the CIA and Vito Genovese and a general. And she and her husband got frightened, and her husband went on to New Orleans from the Dallas area, where he died of poisoning. Earl Wayne Garner, suspected of witnessing the Tippit murder. There were threats on his life by Dallas police officials. He died in 1970. Maurice Brooks Gatlin died in 64 with links to the CIA, the FBI, to Guy Bannister, to Permandex, and was familiar and associated with people named in the assassination plans to kill John Kennedy and also the attempts on Charles de Gaulle. He worked with Jerry Brooks and fell out of a sixth-floor window. Sam Giacano, a part of a team with Robert Mayhew of the CIA assassination team, died just before he was to be called before Senator Church's committee. Oh, it was in 1975. David Goldstein was the man who traced the weapon that was used to murder J.D. Tippit. He died in 1965. Jesus Gonzalez Carta worked with Rolando Masferrer, who later, they worked with Alpha 66, the anti-Castro Cuban groups. He was paid $200,000 to kill the president of Costa Rica. He was part of the assassination teams. Alexander Guterma, he died in 1977, a white Russian exile involved with the Galen operation and with George de Morenschild. Bill Hunter, a reporter in Jack Ruby's apartment, was there November 24th, 1963, died. Tom Howard, Jack Ruby's first attorney, he was seen in the police department basement when Lee Harvey Oswald was shot. Larry Harris, Penn Jones wrote about Larry Harris. I'm not familiar with his importance in the case. In continuing inquiry, he has information on the death of a witness, Larry Harris, which I didn't look up before I made this tape. I'll have to check out Penn's article. William Harvey of the CIA provided the weapons and the killing for the assassination team, so the organized crime and the CIA worked with Sheffield Edwards and Robert Mayhew. Remember that they keep talking about John Roselli and Sam Giacana, witnesses to the Kennedy assassination from organized crime who died. They always leave out the name of Sheffield Edwards and William Harvey, the two connecting links of the members of organized crime to the CIA. Milton Halpern, I mentioned before, who exposed the John Kennedy autopsy and said there's no way that the bullets that went through John Connally and John Kennedy would line up to be two bullets. Lisa Howard, a journalist, a go-between, a liaison of Fidel Castro, and diplomatic talks between John Kennedy and Fidel Castro. Marguerite Higgins accused the USA of complicity in killing Diem. Another writer, and just before the John Kennedy assassination, she was aware of joint conspiracies. Jimmy Hoffa, again, links to the John Kennedy assassination, his hatred of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, his close association with Carlos Marcella, Sam Giacana. His name comes up frequently with regards to the Kennedys and how John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy had prosecuted him and put him in jail, and he hated them with a vengeance because he was tying up the syndicate families by having the Justice Department investigate them. S.M. Holland, a witness to the shooting of John Kennedy at the Grassy Knoll. Walter Hadley, Jr., the police chief who made tapes at the police department in Miami on the details to kill John Kennedy 3 weeks before John Kennedy was killed in Dallas, Texas. Those were the plans that involved Joseph Miltier, who later was supposed to be in Dealey Plaza. The hearings this last week discounted Miltier as not being there because he's only 5 foot. Four, I don't know where they got those measurements. They said the man that looked exactly like him was shorter, but they also mentioned that people's heights vary inches because of various shoes they wear and the position of the camera. But Miltier had worked with this particular man in Miami. Hobart Higgins is a pilot who flew private planes to South America that could have been involved with a getaway of the Oswald doubles. He had links to Jack Ruby. J. Edgar Hoover died in May 1972, and Philip DeDiego said that the White House plumbers had poisoned him, that he knew too much, and J. Edgar Hoover would have had the information, certainly, of William Sullivan, Division 5, and the political assassinations. Mrs. Dorothy Hunt, the hot wife of E. Howard Hunt, was killed in a plane over Chicago at a time where the White House was talking about the Watergate going back to the Bay of Pigs, which was a code name, actually, for the Kennedy assassination. I'm sure that they realized that the story would have to open up and unfold going back to that date with Frank Fiorina and Frank Sturgis and E. Howard Hunt. And she was on an airplane traveling with money and information going back to the Bay of Pigs when her plane was blown up. Hiram Ingram, a close friend of Roger Craig, the sheriff from Dallas County that was murdered, was killed. Reverend Clyde Johnson, a key witness to the Clay Shaw trial, made connections of Lee Harvey Oswald to Clay Shaw, attended parties where David Ferry, Lee Harvey Oswald, and attended, and was to testify before Jim Garrison's committee, said that Ruby was at these parties, but like David Ferry, he never made them. Before this tape runs out and we get to the other tape, because there's only a certain amount of time, and I will begin next week's tape with some more of these death witnesses, because I think they're terribly important. There's one name here that I don't want to miss, because I mentioned part of a testimony on a tape last week, 2 weeks ago, and I want you to look that up. It has to do with Buddy Walters. Buddy Walters, his name is Eddie Raymond Buddy, died in 1969. He was a member of the Dallas Police Department, and he claimed that over the area at the Grassy Knoll where everyone was running, that he picked up a .45 caliber slug in the grass. Now, this is some of the evidence that's missing. Buddy Walters claims that he had that as a policeman, and that .45 caliber slug, of course, was never presented as evidence in the investigation of the assassination to kill John Kennedy. Those of you who take the tapes regularly have tape cassette number 346, August the 18th, 1978, side one. And in that tape, I talk about a book that is coming out in England. Somebody was over in Europe and had information that is there, but it's hard to get, called Treason for My Daily Bread by Mikhail Lebedev, Russian Nazi agent. And this book was reviewed in June of 1977, Valenci Press in London. And in this book, they allege that Martin Bormann sent an agent killer to the United States who fired the fatal bullet on John Kennedy, that Lee Harvey Oswald was a decoy, that Zed is the code name for the man who did the fatal bullet over by the fence, and that he fired a .45 bullet. Now, I think that's interesting that this book is coming out talking about a .45 bullet, because Buddy Walters, as a police officer in the Dallas area, said he found a .45 caliber slug in the grass. Now, I don't know how bullets fire, and I'm not that informed about them, but I'm sure if there were somebody shooting and he had to make a quick getaway to the railroad cars, or someone going to the cars later, might have been one of those tramps that was taken off that did the fatal headshot, they would know that they're setting up Oswald as a patsy. We've heard that from Joseph Miltier, from the Miami police, and from many sources, and Lee Harvey Oswald said, "I'm a patsy." So a .45 caliber slug could be thrown in the grass. Buddy Walters picks it up, everybody laughs, and nobody believes it. The Dallas police won't touch it, the FBI won't touch it, and I don't know where it is or what happened to it, but then he was killed and was given a big policeman's funeral. But this might be the very thing that matches to that assassin by the name of Zed. I'll get back to the list of names of people that I think are important witnesses that have died under unusual circumstances or very young. Their deaths should be looked into. And I won't have time on this tape to complete them, so I'll start the tape for next week and put them right on that tape. Lyndon Johnson, January 1973. I mentioned him before. It's important because his name came up during the hearings that he did, in fact, know about the assassination team of organized crime and the Central Intelligence Agency. And in alphabetical order under that is Thomas Karamessine. That is the chief of clandestine services that I talked about. Talked about him. He passed away Labor Day this year, 1978. Dorothy Kilgallen, about to break the story of the assassination of John Kennedy. She was with Jack Ruby for a few moments. There's an entire book coming out about the murder of Dorothy Kilgallen. She's one of the names that was run off by the House Select Committee during the televised hearings just a series of names. They quickly gave 17 names that died before 1967 and didn't even make note of the fact that an entire book is being written about Dorothy Kilgallen. Hank Killam, his wife, worked for Jack Ruby. A close friend of his lived with Lee Harvey Oswald at the rooming house at Beckley Street. And, of course, Ruby had the other contacts with Bertha Cheek, the sister of Earlene Roberts, who had the rooming house where Lee Harvey Oswald stayed. We're going to continue the deaths now on the other side and get into the evidence that's missing.